It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day, call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest.
Welcome into the show.
Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out.
I mean, it feels like you start every show after a Rockets game repeating a consistent theme. They win and they dominate. This one was a little different. If you didn't see the game, the Rockets struggled in the first half against the Portland Trail Blazers B team. You might say, Dell, that's a little insulting. No, it isn't. No Anthony Simons, no Jeremy Grant, no Air Mattress DeAndre Ayton. And I know it was a B team because it was like a spring training game, because there was a guy with the number 72 starting. When you see the number 72 in any sporting event, you know, generally, that guy isn't a starter. I mean, with the Astros wrapping up spring training, not even spring training, they're in town playing their affiliate, the Space Cowboys, and lost to them 3-1. But that's on my mind. Spring training baseball and guys who play on the B field or come in and play because your lineup isn't going to be out there. And the Portland Trailblazers had the guy with the number 72 starting. I don't know how you picked that number. We know Luka has 77, and he's the one guy I will accept losing to who wears a number in the 70s. Jalen Green is kind of right now the bell cow, if I'm using a football term, for the Rockets. He struggled in the first half, and that means they struggled. We know the offense kind of runs through him at this point, and he was bad in the first half. It was very February Jalen Green. And the Rockets looked like the February version of themselves until he decided to remember, this is March Jalen Green. I'm playing for other things.
Hey, they got number 72 out there.
Yeah, what am I doing? Why are we losing to number 72? This is not going to happen. We're not going to end the winning streak by losing to a Portland lineup that featured a guy wearing 72 and other players no one has ever heard of because, as I said, it's a Trailblazers B team. They got it together. Jalen Green got it together. And the Rockets have now won 9 in a row. And that means they have the longest streak in the NBA winning streak because the Boston Celtics lost. They had a 30-point lead against the Atlanta Hawks and lost on the road in Atlanta. And did you see how unserious the Hawks are? The Hawks take the lead in the fourth quarter. They're leading. They miss a jump shot. I think maybe DeJounte Murray misses a mid-range jumper, and the Hawks get a rebound. The shot clock is turned off now. They don't have to shoot the ball again. They can get fouled and go to the free throw line and try to salt this game away. Instead, when the ball's kicked out to DeAndre Hunter, he takes a three with about 9 seconds left on the game clock. Shot clock turned off. He makes it. The Hawks go up 4. They go on to win the game. But, you know, because it's a three-pointer at the end of a game, very well could have missed. I know he was wide open. That's a shot you don't take. He took it. He made it. The Hawks go on to win the game. And the Celtics now have the questions they always answer. They always lose games this way. For as good as they've been, they always happen to lose a game. The games they lose are always this way, where their offense kind of shuts down and Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown turn into guys who forget that the offense doesn't have to run through them. And by run through them, I mean simply dribble the clock out. And the defense falters. But the Celtics we're nitpicking at them, because they have the best record in basketball and are playing like at a historic level when it comes to rating. But because of that loss, the Rockets have the longest winning streak in basketball, and they are half a game behind the Warriors. The Warriors go to Miami tonight. Miami trying to stay out of the play-in, so it's an important game for them. So by the end of tonight, Sean, by the time we come in tomorrow, the Rockets could be tied for the final play-in spot.
Yes, they could be tied. The Warriors do have the tiebreaker, so being tied, well, A, being tied on March 27th doesn't do a lot, period. But
yeah,
B, being tied on March 27th when you don't have the tiebreaker does even less, I would say.
It'll make people feel good.
It'll make people feel good. It'll be a nice, you know, where everyone can screenshot the standings. But yeah, ultimately they're going to have to They're going to have to still do more. Obviously, that game against the Warriors on April 4th is going to be a big one. And the Rockets' schedule is going to toughen up here coming up. Coming up with the Thunder. And then I think they play like the Blazers again and maybe one other bad team. And then they, in the month of April, they basically just play playoff games for the rest of the, or playoff teams for the rest of the month. And,
well, you're probably right on that the first time. Playoff games. Every game is going to feel like it matters and they have to win it, which they are in this position because of, I won't even say how poorly they played. They just weren't a team that was playing at such a high level that we could even have these conversations. It's just a product of not being a great team. They, for most of the year, weren't even a good team, but they're playing at an elite level now, which means now these games, it's do or die. I think Craig Ackerman was on the broadcast saying, we cannot lose this game.
I mean, he is 100% right.
He's correct. You cannot lose to that. You can't lose to the Blazers for any reason, really, but that particular version of them, where Grant Simons and Ayton weren't even available. Even Matisse Thybulle was sitting down.
Brogdon was out.
He was out. Yeah, you can't lose to that version. Can't even name that starting five.
I was thinking about it, and because yes, I was echoing Ackerman's words to myself as they were like down three at halftime or whatever it was. And I was like, you cannot lose this game. Like what? And then I was thinking, you know, if the Blazers had Jeremy Grant and Brogdon, or Jeremy Grant and Ayton, or if they had two of the guys that were out, I'd be like, okay, this is like kind of a game we've seen the Rockets lose. I mean, we've literally seen them lose at home to the Trailblazers before because of crazy Brogdon shots that he makes. But I was thinking, yeah, you know, they're playing a little bit over their head lately. They haven't been playing good teams. This is the type of game that teams lose to kind of break winning streaks. And then I saw that they had some guy named Delano Banton leading their team in scoring. And I was like, actually, you can't lose this game.
No.
Actually,
there's no excuse.
No excuse to lose this game. No matter how hard Dylan Brooks tried, the Rockets did enough on offense.
Yeah, Ryan Rupert, he of the number 72.
Yeah okay. I think it's Rupert, actually.
Rupert. He's Rupert until he changed that number. You don't get to be Rupert with number 72. You're Rupert to me.
Rupert.
Yeah.
Stand the corner, Rupert.
Yeah. He started for the Blazers. You mentioned Delano Banton. Delano Banton had a good game, 28 points. Yeah. Was probably, if we're being honest,
I'm gonna tell my kids about that.
The best player on the floor overall. Just overall. Now, he was a minus 25 because the rest of his team stinks. But
he can't hold that to Banton.
Yeah, I'm not going to blame him for that. Jalen Green was the leading scorer again for the Rockets, but he did it on 26 shots. So it was very reminiscent of the Jalen Green we had come to know and maybe loathe. But the Blazers stink so badly that the Rockets controlled that second half after being down by four at the half. And they found the way. Jock Landale was good in the first quarter, really kept the Rockets afloat. As Portland, I mean, they weren't playing well, but they were playing better than we had hoped. But the Rockets win 110-92, which means all eyes point to South Beach with the Warriors in Miami. As I said, by tomorrow morning, well, earlier than that, by tonight, your Rockets could be tied with the Warriors. And Sean has pointed out because he wants to ruin our fun. They don't own the tiebreaker. And being tied on March 26th means next to nothing.
No, I'm just instilling, like Ime Udoka, I'm instilling a toughness in the Rockets fan base.
In the fan base?
I don't want people to, you know, shoot off fireworks when Jaime Jaquez sends the Warriors packing.
When the corpse of Patty Mills makes a three late to seal the deal for the Miami Heat.
When they see, oh my God, Tyler Hero, I'm in love with this game.
They wish. That dude hasn't played since late February.
Oh, he hasn't?
No,
oh.
He's injured quite a bit this year.
So now the Miami Heat can go on a run?
As apparently it always happens. But, I mean, he's been hurt for quite a while, and they've been treading water. So he can say, see, it doesn't always happen. They don't always take off when I'm out. They've been fairly mid since his absence. But, yeah, if you want something to watch with the Rockets off, t- tune in. I don't know if it's going to be on NBA TV. No, it will not. So you have to use League Pass and watch the Heat and see if they can beat Golden State. And then your Rockets can be even, and we'll see if they leave the Warriors in the dust. Of course, they have the Warriors coming up here in a little bit, and I don't know if that'll decide the race, but it'll play a part in determining whether the Rockets have a real shot down the stretch to make the play-in, which was something that felt like out of bounds. But this show was ahead of the game. We were talking about meaningful basketball before anyone here, and we're going to take that one and say, look, if you want someone to lead you, make it the Del Olaleye Show featuring Sean Bates, because we have foresight.
Real ball knowers.
Yeah.
Here.
I mean, John don't know ball. Jeremy Branham was hoping for a tank. He don't know ball. Of course, when Şengün got hurt, I knew the Rockets would take off. Yeah. In fact, the Portland Trail Blazers broadcast, and you're asking me, Del, why are we watching the Portland Trail Blazers broadcast? Because I find ways to watch games because I don't have a version of live TV where I have Space City. So I have to watch it in different ways. We won't talk about them explicitly. I just find ways to watch games. They were talking about the on-off as far as what Jalen Green is when Şengün's on the floor and when he's off. There's like an 8-point difference between Jalen Green's numbers when Şengün is around and when he's not. I don't know what it means for the future, only that Jalen Green apparently appreciates not having another option out there to throw the ball into. That's all it means. I don't know if they'll figure out a way where they can both excel, but the numbers are out there that he's a much more explosive player when he doesn't have to be concerned about getting Şengün the ball. That's all. That's all. Doesn't mean anything other than maybe a five guy who takes up usage isn't what Jalen Green needs. But the Rockets will figure that out next season. What matters this season, they've got a real chance to make a playoff push. And by playoff push, make the play-in. And then you have to win two more games. So it's not like it'll get easy. But the Rockets are playing good enough basketball where it is now a question of whether playing the Lakers in L.A. in a play-in game is going to be on the table.
Hey, they've beat the Lakers, three times this year? Two times, at least?
Yeah, now they will be...
They beat them a few times this year.
Yeah, now it'll be a little different. They won't have the size that Şengün provides, so we'll see if being smaller and more athletic against a big Laker team will help, or the difference will be no Şengün and then the Lakers win. We'll see. But we know, at least, that... The head coach thinks LeBron's a soft-ass boy, and that's really a fun idea to
that
see
helps.
If those two happen to see each other again. Sean, the NFL is doing things to change the way the game will look, and I'm going to ask you, are you a guy who's against change? Think about it. You know what's happening in the NFL. I'll let the people know if they don't. Multiple rule changes are in effect to change the way the NFL will look in 2024, and I know there's some pushback. The man who sits in this chair before me, when he's not dirtying up the area, had major questions and kind of called it gimmicky what the NFL is doing. I'm okay with it. I don't mind change. Maybe you do, Sean. We'll talk about that on the other side. And certainly if you guys have thoughts on what the NFL is doing to change, particularly special teams and player safety, call in 713-780-3776. You can always tweet at us at Sean A. Mapes and at DelV2. We're just getting started here on the show. We'll be back.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew.
This is the Del Olaleye Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olaleye.
Welcome back. And before we get to the NFL news regarding changes to the kickoff and, well, you guys know about the hip drop tackle, which is part of the conversation as well. The Texans have made something official that was rumored and then maybe was pulled back, possibly because they couldn't acquire a Keenan Allen type. But Shaq Mason, they have restructured his base salary and turned it into a signing bonus, which means they now have $6.4 million in caps, more in cap space. So if you are a person who likes to keep track of that, maybe you have a bookmark for Texans over the cap or a spot track, however you decide. The Texans now have $6.4 million. Shaq Mason gets a nice little chunk of change up front, and the Texans have more money to spend for what? Who knows? There are some What's that? We got news?
We have breaking news. The Texans have a new owner. It's Cal McNair, who's voted unanimously to take it over for his mom.
Okay, so the change of power is complete.
Transfer of power.
Not if Kerry had his way.
I guess it wasn't that peaceful.
It wasn't that peaceful. He tried to commit her almost. We go from Janice to Cal, and the eldest boy doesn't get his way. Cal McNair is now the official principal owner of the Texans, which means that we hope to lean on Hannah because we think she's behind all the positive things. There's no real clear evidence of that. We just assume that she is the reason that things have gone well over the last year or so. But Cal McNair voted unanimously to be the principal owner of the Texans.
Now, was that 31, or I guess 30 nothing, since the Packers don't have one? Or I guess they have a chairman. But anyway, was it all voted yes, or was there was just no vote, and Amy Adams Shrunk abstained, like we like we talked about?
Yeah, you missed it yesterday. We suggested that because of the rivalry between really at the top level, the ownerships, Hannah and Cal against Amy Adams Shrunk, that she might abstain as opposed to just voting no. I think if we had found out someone abstained, we probably would have heard it.
Yeah.
I think it's a clear 31-0 if the Packers have an actual owner can vote, which I assume they do. They have a chairman, at least. Someone who represents them. So Cal gets through unanimously. He is your official owner. If you're concerned about that, no need to be concerned. A peaceful transition of power once the judges got involved and said, hey, Kerry, knock it off. Stop trying to take power away from your mother. She can say Cal is the one she wants, and we're good. A big old Kindle energy from Kerry. The eldest boy does not win, and I guess we can all feel good about that. We've got Cal in charge, which is amazing that people can breathe a sigh of relief.
Yeah, right. I mean, remember where we were? I mean,
just
14 months ago,
hoping that someone would take it off his hands, hoping that Kerry would swoop in. I mean, we didn't know all the backstory of what he would have to do to his mom to get it done. But the hope was that someone not named a current McNair that we know was involved with the team would come in and change things, even if it had to be a sell, as long as the team stayed in Houston. Now, no worries on that. We have solid ownership as long as D'Amico continues to win. Because if it changes, then all of a sudden we don't have solid ownership anymore. If Cal... someone put it well. Cal's not a wartime consigliere. He's not a wartime owner. Things are going poorly.
That is true. That seems like that's the case on Cal McNair. Is that he's not a good crisis manager?
No,
he's not a good wartime consigliere. Like he's good in the peace times. He can drop new uniforms and throw up the H.
Yeah, if there's a leak. As I said before, a Walmart brand Derek Stingley is wearing the uniform. He can put out the stylized version and get people to calm down a little bit of what the uniforms look like on actual players. But if it was some real stuff, there's not a lot of confidence there.
You can't do an interview with Big Sarge and get out of that one. Like you gotta.
That's true.
You gotta make some actual tough decisions, Cal.
Just make sure Nick Caserio drafts well again, and CJ plays well,
and keeps his personal life clean.
Yeah, and D'Amico's great. Then Cal can thrive. So let's not have a bump on the road, because if there is one, I feel like we're going into a ditch, and not the ditch that Bob talked about pulling the ox out of, just an actual ditch that screws over the team. But thankfully, we're not in that mode. We've got a smooth paved road, and things are all trending in the right direction. And we'll get into something about what the country, at least the betting country, thinks about the Texans. As far as their win total, that came out today. We'll get into that. But first, I did want to get into the NFL news regarding the kickoff. The kickoff is changing. They want to bring kickoffs back, at least kickoff returns back. So if you are unaware, here are really the specifics. The kickoffs will still be from the 35, but the kickoff team will line up at the opponent's 40. And the return team will line up at the 35. So there'll be 5 yards between the two. If a kickoff lands between the zero, between the goal line and the 20-yard line of the receiving team, no one can move until the returner touches it, whether it lands and hits the ground or it's caught on the fly. You cannot move until he touches the football. If the ball is kicked into the end zone and lands in the end zone directly, the ball comes out to the 35. That's the new touchback. If the ball bounces at the 5-yard line, rolls into the end zone, and is downed, then that's what we know as a what we know the current touchback yardage marker is a 20. And I believe if we see a squib kick or the ball is kicked short of the landing zone, like say the ball lands at the 25-yard line, then we're moving the ball out to the 40. Sure, on its face, it feels like it's complicated, but once you hear it or read it, you'll be fine. I mean, for the goal is to increase safety. We don't want guys running at each other full speed, and they want kickoffs to come back. And much like anything that changes, people are a little upset or freaking out. No change. It's weird. It's gimmicky until it happens, and we'll get used to it because football rules all. And as long as there's football, we'll find a way, even if it bothers us, to be okay with the new kickoff. And if you want to see how it works, just go on YouTube and type XFL kickoff. That's the basis for it. The NFL has tweaked it a little bit, but that's where it comes from. You can watch those clips and see how those kickoffs have played out. I'm sure you'll probably get a lot of the kickoff return touchdown stuff, but not everything was a return for a touchdown. You can still make tackles and still make good defensive plays, or at least good special teams plays. So that's the new rule. That's the biggest rule. We talked about the other rule changes yesterday. Now, Sean, are you one of those people who is, what are they doing to the game I love? Or are you adaptable? How is your first react? What's your first reaction to what's going to happen come the fall?
I'm pro this because you look at what kickoffs had become the last handful of years, and it really is just like a play that you don't even need to watch in the NFL. Just the kicker's going to kick it 5 yards deep into the end zone.
Yeah.
That's kind of be it. Or if a guy does return it, it feels like 75% of the time it's a mistake and they don't get it to the 20 or 25. It feels like.
Yeah, it feels like you've made an awful mistake.
Yeah.
Now you screwed up your field position.
So anytime you can take a play from you're upset when someone does a football thing on the field to, oh, now this has room for excitement. I'm pro that. So, you know, turning this from a kind of formality play, it feels like, where, you know, how many times did a game start and they're like, and here's the kickoff, out of bounds. All right. Pat Mahomes runs onto the field. He's going to, you know, like it felt like the broadcasts were almost built around, okay, we kind of have to stop for the ceremony of kicking the ball away.
Yeah.
And then it goes through the uprights. And now we show the quarterback trotting onto the field.
So like, almost felt like a celebrity from your town throwing out a first pitch.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll watch this and then we'll move on to the actual action. It wasn't a thing. And it just, they broadcasted it because, well,
it's part of the game.
It's part of the game.
But literally, it's part of the game.
But literally, if they probably would have rather ran a commercial, a 15-second commercial.
Yeah.
Because nothing's going to happen here.
And, you know, for me, obviously the kickoffs weren't working. So you have two options, either try to fix it or just give everybody the ball at the 25.
Sure.
And this is better than just giving everyone the ball at the 25. You keep special teams in the game, Dell. It's still one third of the game.
I've heard that before.
Yeah,
it's an important phase.
Yeah, so I'm willing to try this. Now, if this, you know, they try this and this doesn't work or has some unintended consequence or something, then we can talk. But I feel like it's worth a shot because what we were dealing with last year was you just get the ball at the 25 every time.
All the time, and you're praying your kickoff returner doesn't bring it out of the end zone,
or they do bring it out, and then there's like a block in the back, and you're getting it from
at the 10.
From the 10. It like there was no upside to the play, and which is funny because we literally cover a team where
that had two kickoff return touchdowns.
I mean, obviously. Obviously, Andrew Beck is just a freak athlete, so really any rule set can't really contain him. He's like a
no weapon formed against him shall prosper.
He's like a He's a white Devin Hester, so you know that there's only so much they can do about that.
Yeah,
but no, I'm excited for it. I'm not, this is gimmicky. It's like, well, you know, they kind of need a gimmick to save this play. You know, like you could also say 2-point conversions are gimmicky. You can say overtime is gimmicky. Like, there's a lot of stuff that's gimmicky that's in the NFL. This is one of them, and it takes a play that sucks into a play that can hopefully work.
I am there with you. I am adaptable, and we'll see how it goes. I didn't watch a lot of the XFL, so I don't have a real negative or positive thought about it one way or the other. But bring it on. If you have a dynamic returner, more power to you, and it forces special teams to mean something again, at least the kickoffs. And maybe we'll see how creative these kickers can get, putting the ball in certain spots. Now, obviously, the guys can't move until it's caught. But if you put the ball in the corner of the end zone, I mean, not corner of the end zone, but a coffin corner kickoff, and the guy still has to return it, that could play to your advantage too.
Yeah, that's another thing that makes this more interesting, that kickers now don't just kick the ball as hard as they can. Like, that's not the strategy anymore.
There actually is some skill now involved.
There's some skill. And like you said, there could be some strategy that develops from that of trying to cough and corner people. And if there's, like, a great returner, you could try doing something else. Like, there's just a lot of different things that that can happen now.
Yeah. And if you do have a great returner who's proven himself dangerous, you have to weigh the option of kicking the ball straight into the end zone, because you'd rather have them start at the 35 than him being able to return kicks in this new format. So there will be some actual strategy involved, and I welcome that. Make it a play that matters again. David and Eric, I see you. Eric wants to talk about Astros pitching, and David wants to talk about the new rule change. If you want to talk about anything, 713-780-3776. We'll get to you guys on the other side. We're late for a break. We'll be back.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Back here with you on the show. Remember, you can always watch the show. I mean, if our computer doesn't crash, you can always watch the show on YouTube. ESPN Houston is what you search for. And certainly ESPN975.com is how you listen to us if you're in front of a computer. My choice is to always download have the app on my phone, download that. It's, at least I think, the easiest way to listen and keep up to date about what's going on the station. But David wants to talk about the new rule change. What's up, David?
Hey, Del, thanks, guys, for taking the call. You know, I'm just going to say, anybody complaining about this rule is just has never seen it happen, or just is complaining about something to just make noise, because it is. I am a football fan and been to plenty of XFL games. Was eating the season ticket holder for a while because, yeah, I'm a football nut. But that's okay. I mean, it brings a lot of action back into it. And it was a hope that me and all the guys that went to the games had hoped that they would bring into the NFL. So I was relatively pleased that they did. I mean, it makes it relevant. From another position, I feel like it's going to get the butts in the seats sooner. Maybe that's just a small part of it. But, I mean, it gets everybody excited right there for kickoff, because there is zero excitement about a kickoff right now.
David, you said you are a season ticket holder to XFL games. So what is the percentage of, let's say, big plays to being tackled at the 25 or 30? What, if you can remember, how did that go as far as?
You know, I will tell you, you would have a good run back is something that's going to be around the 50, you know, somewhere around midfield. So it is going to expose the game to better field position. That was the best thing that I saw. And then there's other times where if you don't get your blocking and tackling back, I've seen it be all the way back strategically kicking and have somebody pinned down inside the 20. So there's a lot more strategy that goes into it. A lot of these special teams coaches that were in the XFL are going to start, you know, doing a little bit of side work, or maybe working for the NFL teams as well, just because it is going to add some strategy back to it, and it's worth it. I mean, it is. There should be nobody complaining about it. And I heard LZ this morning. You know, I think he was just probably goofing more than anything else. But I mean, it just makes the game better all the way around, and I can assure everybody of that.
All right, man. Appreciate that, David. Firsthand knowledge. Watched the XFL and was at the games and said it brought excitement. I appreciate that, man. If anyone else has his type of experience, or maybe you have a differing opinion, bring it. But that's a new rule in place. You're going to see kickoffs mean something again. And as he said, it'll bring a different element and some strategy. We'll see how the mad geniuses on special teams figure out ways to combat what it feels like an opportunity to gain great field position. How do they train their kickers? How do they train their covering units to limit the damage?
I think it'll be a little bit less at, you know, ball at the 50 than the XFL was, just because it's like NFL defenders. And I wonder how many of those are broken tackles and stuff like that.
Yeah, and they're also going to be lined up
5 yards apart.
5 yards apart, but actually further away from their turner. So maybe they have an opportunity. So maybe not one miss lane. Mm-hmm. Maybe a miss lane doesn't turn into a giant gain because the returner is still farther away than he would be in the XFL situation. So a lot of things to have to play out. I think it puts an onus on the returner to be kind of at least football smart, knowing where you're catching the football, understanding that you can't run parallel for very long or you're going to cost your team major field position. So an element to the game that we'll see play out in the preseason. We'll see how excited people are for it.
The blunders early in the year are going to be amazing.
Yes.
I mean, we need to get Kadarius Toney back there returning kicks. We need to do anything we can to get guys that just do not understand what we're doing here.
I think a lot of guys will think this is an opportunity because they're just going to believe, hey, this person's not coming full speed at me. I got a real shot. I think a lot of reversing of fields. Retreating is going to happen.
Try to return it like a kick in the end zone. They're not going to let it bounce. They're just going to try to return it because they're not going to be, I'm in the end zone now.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities to see who should be back there and who shouldn't be. And having a somewhat intelligent kickoff returner is going to mean quite a bit.
Do you think special teams coordinators were for or against this rule?
Well, I know
NFL special team coordinators.
Well, according to some of the reporting, special teams coordinators pushed for this. Some of the prominent ones, like Darren Rizzi's been around a long time. He was one of the guys mentioned as someone who was a proponent of this. I think Andy Reid he's not a special teams guy, but he was a proponent for it as well. So it did have some support among, I guess, the establishment, if we're going to call Andy Reid that. But also the special teams guys were for because it makes their jobs more valuable. Now, if you suck at special teams as a coach, you're probably hoping, hey, can we just kick the ball in the end zone? But if you're a Darren Rizzi, an established type, you're like, hey, man, I got ideas. I know I can make myself far more valuable.
That is true. That's true. I was thinking that they would be against it because they're like, ugh, makes my job so much harder.
Yeah. Well, if you stink at it, you probably just want to be able to kick the ball in the end zone and keep it moving.
Yeah, just kick it as hard as you can, dude.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Did my job for today. Now they have to sit there and watch XFL tape.
Yeah. Oddly enough, those guys aren't like us. Sean.
They're highly motivated individuals.
To prove their worth. We're like, oh, man, I got to do this.
How much do they make? Come on.
I'm sure those salaries, depending on who you are and how long you've been in the game, probably a guy's probably making NFL coordinator money. I mean, or college coordinator money, like an OC. I'm sure a special teams coordinator is probably making over $1 million, maybe two, depending how long they've been doing it. Eric, and if it's Eric Wong, I can kind of guess where this call is going to go. What's up, Eric?
Hey, guys. Shorter Toy Times and Sports Show History. Yeah, with Blake Snell gone, can the Astros pick up another starting pitcher like Montgomery? And also, where is P. Diddy? He said if he's going down, he's going to take down the rest of Hollywood. Is he going to be found unalive? I'll hang up and listen.
Well, if the question is, can the Astros sign Jordan Montgomery? Sure. I mean, they can if they wanted to. It seems unlikely they will. They were in on Blake Snell, as Eric pointed out. I don't imagine it'll happen because of Jordan Montgomery's asking for what Blake Snell was asking for. The Astros found that too much. it wasn't a number they were willing to reach, and I don't imagine Jordan Montgomery is going to be far off of Blake Snell's number. It's a question of what the price is. If it's a price the Astros like, sure. But if it's in the Blake Snell range, then no. Jordan Montgomery will continue to wait. Do you think Jordan Montgomery's not on a major league roster? Well, we're days away. I guess he won't be.
Unless he signs today or tomorrow, yeah. He won't be.
I guess he won't be. I asked that question, and I realized opening day is Thursday. So there's a real shot that Jordan Montgomery is not on a major league roster by the time the season starts.
And if you're Jordan Montgomery at this point, do you just wait until someone gets hurt? You just wait until someone on Atlanta, someone on
a contender gets hurt?
Someone in Houston, someone in wherever else gets hurt.
Yeah. Well, waiting for Houston, two guys are on the IL. Now they're expected to return. It's not there's not season-ending injuries, so that's probably why there isn't such a real rush to sign them. But Houston, you would think, would be a team he could have found his way on, and the price is the price. And we know Jim Crane certainly will stick to it, so the answer is no to Jordan Montgomery. And we'll see where he lands. As far as this, what was the second question?
P. Diddy.
I saw TMZ said he was pacing around a Miami private airport. I'm not sure where he is now. Then we saw the reports of the plane being in Barbuda, however that's pronounced.
No extradition.
Yeah, of course. I mean, we've seen enough TV shows to know why he's flying to a certain spot.
I've seen enough movies.
Yeah, we know. We've seen enough. There's enough things out there that we've seen to let us know why he would want to be in certain countries. I don't know if he'll take down all of Hollywood. He may just have to worry about himself, particularly when his sons had handcuffs on them as they were being removed from his L.A. home. Mm-hmm. Not great.
Funny enough, the movies were like the type of movie where this comes up would be Bad Boys.
And Bad Boys 4, I think the trailer just dropped.
Yes, that's kind of what made me think of okay. it. That's why it's so at top of the mind. But I'm pretty sure that came up in Bad Boys 2.
No extradition. Bad Boys 4 is out. I mean, Will Smith, the first time we've seen him since. Is that his first major thing since the slap?
As far as a movie?
Has he been in anything?
I'll...
I know he was in a video game that bombed. Like, his face... Like, he is one of the main characters, at least his face is. I'm not sure.
That's a tough one.
I'm not sure he's playing Will Smith in the video game, but he's got his face scanned forward, and no one knew the video game existed until they told us it bombed.
That's a tough one to be like, he was in a video game, .. No one knows the name, .. It sucks.
Yeah. I know nothing about the game other than they showed the image of his face scan in it. And I guess the character he's playing, and that it bombed. That's all I've heard about it.
He was in an Apple TV Plus thing called Emancipation.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't see it. I saw the preview on Apple TV. I saw hey, you want to watch this? I said, no.
No thanks.
I'm good.
Runaway Slave movie?
I'm out. I've seen it. Look, I'm the child of a woman who was born in Georgia. I've seen a lot of them. It was just part of the curriculum growing up. Enough. I don't want to see any more.
No moss.
No more. I've seen my fair share of those. Hey, give me sci-fi sci-fi fantasy over historical dramas where people who look like me are being put in bad situations. I've had the trauma from that just because my mom was like, "Hey, we're watching this." It's like, okay, I'd rather watch Spider-Man, but I guess we'll watch this. Emancipation, I guess, if you want to watch it on Apple TV, go right ahead. But Bad Boys 4, I will watch. I'll be there because the team of Martin Lawrence and Will Smith, I'm in on. I wonder if they'll make reference to what – they'll make some type of reference to what he did to Chris Rock.
He'll slap someone.
Or
– he'll slap Martin Lawrence.
Nor Martin will make a joke about a celebrity wife. Slapping a comedian or something. Okay. I don't know. I think the Jada thing is off limits. Or whoever Mike Lowry's wife would be in the movie. Is he? I know he has a kid from the last movie, a secret kid from the last movie. I don't know if he's gotten married since.
No. We'll see. You can't keep Mike Lowry down, you know?
No. He's prolific.
Key part of his character, actually, is that he is. Martin Lawrence is the married guy. He's the unmarried guy.
Yeah, and now, and part of the thing in Bad Boys 3 was he had a surprise kid.
Which happens, you know.
Happens. I mean, ask our shooting guard, but you dropped his name.
Oh, that's not that.
I always think it's funnier to allude to it and let people, oh, yeah, he's talking about that guy, even though it's pretty obvious. We are way due for a break, so we'll do that now. We'll come back with more on the NFL. The Texans are in the news because D'Amico Ryans was at the owners' meeting, so he was asked several questions. We played some sound from him yesterday. We'll get into what he thought of the Danielle Hunter signing. Probably you would consider the main signing of the free agency period for the Texans. They also traded for Joe Mixon. He was asked about that and the extension that was given. So D'Amico talks about a couple of big acquisitions. We'll hear from him. We'll also hear from Ime Udoka on Jalen Green. Jalen Green played really well in the second half, particularly in that third quarter, to give the Rockets some breathing room. So we'll hear from Ime. We'll hear from D'Amico. And we won't hear from Joe Espada. They lost to the Space Cowboys. You don't get a spot on the show if you lose to the Space Cowboys. Shout out to the Space Cowboys. We run their games here. 1-0 against the Astros, beating up on Big Brother. We'll be back.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Del Olalea Show continues
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's your host, Del Olalea.
Welcome back. We are way over, so we'll make this quick. We'll just talk about what Sean brought up during the break. Sean, what's the news, according to Schefter?
According to Adam Schefter, the NFL is planning on having a Christmas Day game this year in 2024.
Now that's normal. They've had Christmas Day games in the past. Yes. Why is this one unique?
The reason this one is unique is that Christmas is on a Wednesday.
Yes, which would mean, at least we're speculating, that they're going to have to play games on Saturday, which they do at that time of the year, and pluck two teams from the Saturday slate to go play on Wednesday, which is still rough either way. Late in the year, you're beat up and you got a short week, but
away from your family, you know.
Well, maybe that's a benefit depending on who you are. You never know. I don't know. But in this case, instead of Sunday, Thursday, it will be Saturday, Wednesday. Mm-hmm. But that's still rough. That's tough for that type of turnaround. But I guess they would say, well, then you have a mini bye week to start January. So I guess if we're trying to look for positives, it would be that. But we'll see how that – we'll see. I'm sure people will be up in arms. But it's the same thing. It's the same thing as long as those two teams are being pulled from the Saturday schedule.
Yes. In case you're wondering, Robert Griffin III replied to the Schefter tweet with a he said, Wednesday Christmas – and it's a picture of Wednesday Adams from the show Wednesday.
So Jenna Ortega?
Yes. With a Santa hat photoshopped on her head.
So
that was RG3's contribution.
Do you think he had that in the tuck, ready to go for any time Wednesday and Christmas was brought up? Or did
Good
or,
question.
Or on, did he know this announcement was coming? Or did he just immediately – well, that would be in the tuck. Or did he just immediately go – make this happen?
Okay, so Adam Schefter tweeted the original tweet at 10:04 a.m. RG3 tweeted at 10:07 a.m.
So three minutes later, he had the picture.
Now looking at this,
is it well done?
Yeah, pretty well done. Someone who isn't Robert Griffin III could have done this in 3 minutes.
You don't think he was capable?
I'm unsure of his Photoshop skills, and therefore, here, do you want me to send this to you?
Sure. As we wrap up the first hour.
I think a social media, or a, you know, social media member, team member, would have had to make this in 3 minutes.
I think so.
Or he had it in the tuck.
For whatever reason, he had a Wednesday Christmas picture ready. Which one is worse? If he directed a social media team to do it, or if he had it in a tuck ready to go?
No, the second one was worse. I mean, maybe it's a little bit of both. Maybe it was made for this announcement, and because he's high up there at ESPN, Adam Schefter already knew this news was coming. And so,
and maybe Robert Griffin III knew he just doesn't break news. Yeah. He doesn't break news because that's Schefter's thing.
Yeah, and that could be it. But
either way, the real Wednesday would, if you know, if she wasn't a fictional character, would be pissed.
Yeah, she would not be.
She was not interested in having a red hat celebrating Christmas on her head.
She also would probably be against the football game on Wednesday.
Yeah, she probably think it's brutish and unworthy of the human condition. But that Wednesday is in Beetlejuice too. She is in the new Beetlejuice movie. As the daughter of what's her name?
Winona Ryder.
Winona Ryder. Yes. Yes. So she is in. She is in Wednesday. She's in Beetlejuice. She's got a very gothic type of of resume going right now. And then she's also in a movie with Bilbo Baggins, where she plays a seductress as a high schooler. So a white swath.
Well, wait,
Bilbo from The Hobbit, Martin Freeman.
Oh. I was thinking the Bilbo from the first movie.
Not the
old man.
No, not the Bilbo from the original trilogy, yeah, from the Hobbit trilogy.
That's why it took me a second to get the wheels turning. I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah, no, Martin Freeman, you might know him from the Sherlock series if you watched it with Benedict Cumberbatch.
He's the white guy in Black Panther.
That too. I mean, I don't know his name, but that's the appropriate way to describe him because I don't know his name. But Martin Freeman's in that. She's seducing him, blah, 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 teacher-student relationship. And she's also playing the likes of Wednesday Adams and the daughter of the main character from Beetlejuice.
There's been a lot of student seducing teacher or teacher seducing student movies recently.
It's the thing, yeah. You got a May November, which I haven't watched. It's on Netflix right now.
Mm-hmm. I think there was another one, too.
Well, there are plenty. I mean, it's no. Just, but go, I mean, to, like, just go to Lifetime.
I mean, in the last like 6 months, there's been like actual movies. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess it might. It's a thing. I guess
it is a thing. But
it's always been. It's been a thing for a while. But now,
this is like when like there was Armageddon and Deep Impact. Like,
yeah.
It's like, why are we just making?
Are
this
you an
thing?
Armageddon or Deep Impact person?
Armageddon. Come on.
I kind of like Deep Impact. I don't know.
I don't want to miss a thing. That's
get Ben Affleck out of my face.
What?
Sorry.
Wow.
I don't know.
I'm a big Bruce Willis guy.
Understood.
Big
Liv Tyler's in the movie too. It's got the better star power.
Yeah.
But I like Taya Leone breaking news. Deep Impact.
Yeah,
I had Morgan Freeman as the president.
That's a key part in its favor.
Yeah,
but Armageddon has Steve Buscemi.
Is that a positive thing?
Yeah. Oh, look, don't
do
that.
I hit him. I hit him.
Don't do that.
I hit him where it hurts. I like Steve Buscemi, but I'm still taking Morgan
Owen
as the president.
In it?
Yeah, that doesn't help. He's okay. I don't care.
Longhorn legend Owen Wilson.
I understand the cast of Armageddon far outseeds the cast of Deep Impact. I am just saying, as far as a narrative and a story, I kind of like Deep Impact.
I don't.
I'm aware. I can tell.
I like the premise that it's easier to train oil drillers to be astronauts than astronauts to be oil drillers.
Yes, because astronauts aren't the brilliant, nearly, well, actually, nuclear scientists, and a lot of them in some cases. You know, rocket scientists, what astronauts are, can't train them to be drillers.
You need the steady hand of Bruce Willis.
Yeah, and that's why I want
Ben Affleck.
That's why there was a disaster up there because they actually asked the drillers to be the astronauts.
That's why all but like three of them died.
Yeah, amazing how that occurred. Man, we're deep in our bag right now. We gotta go to break. But hey, if you want to talk about the virtues of Deep Impact versus Armageddon, you can call in. Were there any other disaster movies in that mode where there was two of the same thing, but they were both created at the same time? I'm trying to think. Those two stick out. I can't think of another scenario where we had competing disaster movies of the same ilk, whether it be an asteroid or a hurricane or something.
Yeah. Or like, yeah.
Yeah. I think that one takes the cake. How come there wasn't like a competing Twister movie called Cyclones or something?
Wasn't there like The Greatest Storm or something like that? Or
maybe.
Like Superstorm or something?
Maybe, but it wasn't.
Geostorm. That was the name.
Yeah, that was more recent than.
Yeah. And Sharknado. Those had to overlap.
Geostorm's got to be, hey, leave us out of it. Don't.
I don't know. Geostorm can't turn their nose up.
It's pretty bad. But they're like, hey, we got into theaters. Don't give us a sci-fi treatment, sci-fi channel treatment. But yeah, Geostorm wasn't good either. Is that one of the, what's his name? I'll think of it when we come
Gerard
back.
Butler?
That guy. He's in a lot of those.
I'm all over Gerard
He's in
Butler.
Greenland. Isn't he like in Greenland, which is another one of those movies too?
Yeah, he's in Plane.
Oh, he is in Plane.
Which is going to get a sequel.
I have Plane is going to get in Plane 2?
Yeah, I think it's going to be like ship or boat.
Well, you got to change it up.
Got to.
You
got to
keep people on their toes. That'll wrap up hour one. If you thought we were going to get out of the hour without nonsense, you don't know what this show's about. If you want to call in about your favorite disaster movies and why Gerard Butler is a god amongst men, 713-780-3776. You can call about other stuff too. We'll be back.
ESPN 97.5.